Well, hey, we're in James chapter 5, the last chapter in this series of James. And if you need a Bible, if you want to follow along with us this morning, just slip your hand up. Donnie's back there pretty close. Todd's back there. If you slip your hand up, they'll grab one of those Bibles and get it to you. And use that to follow along with us this morning in James chapter 5. I heard a story about this pastor who would get up to teach, and when he would get up to teach, he would just pause for a second. And his son took notice of that, much like my sons take notice of what I do. And so his son asked him, he said, "Dad, why, when you get up to preach, do you pause for a minute before you start?" And he said, "Well, son, I asked God to help me preach a good sermon." And his son thought for a second and said, "Why doesn't God answer that prayer?" Well, the title to our message this morning is Being Rich Can Make You Spiritually Poor. Being rich can make you spiritually poor. Some of you are like, "Woof, I don't have to worry about that," right? Because I am not rich. And you may think, as we start this passage in chapter 5, that this is not a message for you, because James says, "Now listen, you rich people." And so some of you are like, "Well, I don't need to listen. I could have stayed home and watched the game after all today." Well, I want you to know that this is a message for each and every one of us. We've heard the expression, "Money talks." And some of you say, "If money does talk, the only thing it says to me is goodbye," right? Because I don't have any. And so it's easy for us to think about or look at our bank account or see what's in our pocket and think, you know, "I'm not rich. This is not a message for me." But I want you to know that the reason that we say we're not rich is because we play the comparison game. And some of you are saying, "No, the reason I'm not rich is because I don't have any money." But we play the comparison game, and unfortunately, we only compare to this side. Right? As we look at those that have more than we have, and listen, there's people out there that have more than we have, don't they? I mean, there's some people out there that are living really well. I saw in 2018, it's been a really good year apparently, in 2018, there are 2,208 billionaires in the world. In this year alone, there's been 259 people that have reached the billionaire status. So, hey, there's still hope for you, right? All of these people, and we look at those people, and when we look at those people, of course, we're not rich. We have very little when we look at those people and we compare our lives to those people that have so much more. But there are 7.6 billion people in the world. 7.6 billion people. Of those 7.6 billion, 3 billion of those people live on less than $2 a day. 1.3 billion of those people live on less than $1.25 a day. That's $456 a year that these people live on. Nearly a billion people live in hunger each and every day. Another billion people don't have access to clean water. UNICEF says 22,000 children will die today due to preventable diseases. Diseases like diarrhea or a cold. Guys, that's almost 1,000 people as we sit here in church. 1,000 children as we sit here in church today that will die of preventable diseases. They're living in poverty. 2 million children will die this year due to poverty. 80% of the world lives on less than $10 each day. 80% of the world. And so as we look around this room, that means almost everyone in here is part of the 80 percentile, or part of the 20% of the richest people in the world. See, when we compare ourselves to this side, we don't have very much, maybe. But when we compare ourselves to this side, this 80% of the world, we realize we may be who James is talking to right here when he says, "Listen, you rich people." If you eat today, if you will have a meal today, or if you have access to clean water today, if you have another set of clothes in your closet, if you have a closet, then you're part of the 20% of the richest people in the world. And so James says, listen to me. Listen, this is a message for all of us. And he starts out with a warning. Now remember, James has been giving us practical truths each week, just super practical how-tos of Christian living. And he does the same thing in our text today, and he tells us how to make our money matter. You want your money to matter? Hey, I know I want my money to matter. And James tells us right here how to make your money matter. We all have money. We may not have much of it, but we all have money. And we all spend our money. Some of you spend more than you have. And that's a message for another Sunday. But we all have money. We all spend money. The question is, do you make your money matter? Do you make your money count? We were just in the States, and when we getting ready to go, our boys have been saving their money for the whole year, getting ready. When we go, man, it is like burning holes in their pockets. All this money that they have saved up from birthdays or little jobs, or I'm going to tell you, this year was the year of breaking teeth. I mean, they had so much money from teeth that they lost that they were ready to go. I mean, my middle son, Jacob, we could be in a store and he wants something, so he'll just work a tooth out and ask for like an advance payment, you know. But they had all this money. We're going to the States, and my youngest son, Micah, he's 6, and man, he didn't, as soon as we walked in the store, he wanted to buy something. And so, you know, like Target, where they have those racks right at the front, man, he's just searching through that stuff. He wants to buy one of all these things, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, these things, this is junk. This is worthless. And if you're a Target executive, I apologize for that. But I'm just like, there's better things. And I just wonder if God doesn't look at our life sometimes and look at our spending sometimes and say, why? There's better things. There's things that have more value. There's things that have more worth. And so this morning, James starts out with a warning to us all. He wants us to make our money matter. He doesn't want our riches to make us spiritually poor. And so he warns us with 3 sins that our money can lead us to. You know, the Bible says that the love of money is the root of all evil. It doesn't say that money is evil. There's people throughout Scripture. You look at Abraham, he was a very wealthy man. Look at Joseph, as he was second in command in Egypt. He was a very wealthy man. Look into, or Job, or you look into the New Testament, and you see some of the Pharisees, like Nicodemus was a wealthy man. Joseph of Arimathea, who gave his tomb for Jesus' body, we just kind of loaned it, really. He didn't give it. He had just loaned it for a couple days, for Jesus' body to be laid for 3 days. This is a wealthy man. It doesn't say, the Bible doesn't tell us that having money or having wealth is wrong, but we got to be careful with it. Because what you see with all those men I named is they didn't trust in their money and they didn't lean in their money. They trusted in the Lord and they leaned on the Lord. And our riches can make us spiritually poor. And James warns us, and he says there's 3 sins that money can lead us to. And the first one he tells us right there in the opening verses, 1-3, he says, now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten up your clothes. Your gold and your silver have corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat the flesh like fire. You have hoarded your wealth in the last days. And the first thing that James warns us against is hoarding our money, hoarding it. James says you've accumulated all this stuff in the last days. You've accumulated all these clothes, all this gold, all this silver, all this wealth that you've gathered to yourself. You've hoarded it, and for what purpose? Do you not know that it won't last? Do you not know that you can't take it with you? That it's not coming with you to eternity. That it's all going to rot. It's all going to corrode. It's all going to rust and burn. You ever seen the show Hoarders? I don't know what. There's this show. And I want to be careful because I know some of these people are dealing with mental illness. But sometimes you watch this show and it's about a person who literally hasn't thrown anything away in years. They do all the yard sales. They keep all their trash because maybe there's something in there that they could use for something. And they literally, you walk in their home, if you can even get into the home, and you start going up. I mean, usually it just starts kind of ramping up this all this stuff. Or there's just pathways, hallways that go through these. So Sarah can't watch it with me. She starts twitching, you know, just seeing this show. All this stuff that these people have in their house. And a lot of it's trash. A lot of it's junk. It's just all this stuff that they're hoarding. And I wonder if sometimes God doesn't look at our lives and the things that we have, the things that we may be holding on to, and he kind of looks at it the same way. It's just accumulating all this stuff that won't last. It's not coming with you. Jesus going, I just hear God up there going, you are not bringing that stuff into my house, right? That's not coming. It's all going to burn. And Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 13 says, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, and its wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners. See, when we hoard our resources, it doesn't just affect others, because it does affect others. Because there's others that could be blessed. There's others that could be benefited from some of the things that we're hoarding. But it doesn't just affect others. It affects us. Because our riches can make us spiritually poor. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, it says, what do you have that God hasn't given you? What do you have that God hasn't given you? God has given you all of these resources. And some of you, you may be sitting there thinking right now, God didn't give this to me. I earned this. I worked hard for this. But I want you to know that God gave you the ability to earn it. God gave you the knowledge to go out and work the job that you worked so hard and to make those resources. What do we have that God hasn't given us? And if God gave it to us, whether small or large, what are we doing with it? And he says, don't hoard it. Don't keep it for yourself. You know, another reason that hoarding our resources is wrong is because it shows a lack of trust in God. Because sometimes people hoard things because they say it's for a rainy day. It's my security. It's my safety blanket. It's my savings. It's just in case. And I want you to know that Scripture does not teach against saving. Matter of fact, that's a biblical principle that we need to be good stewards. We need to save. We need to invest wisely. But there's a difference between hoarding and saving. Saving is when you know that there could be use, or you see a reason that I know that I'm going to retire one day and I might need income. Hoarding is when we do it abundantly, beyond what we could ever need. And so where it's not wrong to save or to invest, what's wrong is when we put our faith in our savings instead of putting our faith in God. When we say my future is secure because I have such and such amount of money in the bank, instead of saying my future is secure because I trust in a God that has the cattle on 1,000 hills. That's why our future is secure. Every one of us knows what we need to live on. Every one of us knows what we should be saving. And every one of us knows when we have extra. May not be very often. But we know when we have extra. The question is, what do we do with that extra? Are we holding it loosely? Are we saying, God, have you given this to me for a purpose? Is there a reason for it? Because I want to make my money matter. I want to make my resources that you've given me, God, have eternal value, eternal purpose. And so James warns us, don't hoard it. in the last days, not to hoard it. The second warning that he gives us in verse 4 is he says, look, the wages that you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you, and their cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. The second warning he gives us when it comes to our money is to not take advantage of others. James is advocating for day laborers here, people who would go out and work the fields and work, I mean, just for that day maybe, and they were to be paid at the end of the day. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 14 and 15 gave the guidelines for this. It says, you shall not oppose a hired servant who is poor and needy. You shall give him his pay on the day that he earns it before the sun goes down, for he is poor and has set his heart on it. These day laborers, they live day to day, literally. If they weren't paid at the end of the day, then they weren't going to eat at the end of the day. Their families weren't going to have a meal for that day. They were dependent on it each and every day. And so to withhold it from them, to withhold this payment, affected them greatly. And so James is saying, if you owe someone, pay someone. And pay them when you said you're going to pay them. You know, we're in a building project right now as we're building Horizon Church. And early on in this process, I remember we got to a Friday and we had to pay our contractor. We needed to pay, he had to pay his workers. And so we got to that end of that day, we got ready to pay him, and we had a problem with the account. We couldn't make the transfer to him. And it was kind of the first thought was, you know, we tried what we could do. We were trying to figure it out. It wasn't working. And I just kind of thought, you know, I guess we'll just have to let him know we can go to the bank and we can, you know, clear this up and get it taken care of on Monday. But then I thought about these guys that had worked hard all week. And I'm telling you, if you go by there, these guys are working hard. And how they were owed on Friday. They were depending on being paid on Friday. And so we started working. We were thinking, even if we have to pull from our own account, even if we have to, you know, move something, we need to pay these guys. Because our reputation is on the line. We owe them, and we need to pay them on the time we said we would pay them. And not only is our reputation on the line, but in a sense, God's name is on the line here. Because if you've ever been on the receiving end of that kind of situation, or I should say the non-receiving end of that situation, and most of us have, when we were owed something, we were supposed to be paid something, and someone was holding up for whatever reason. And if we've ever been in that situation, we start to lack trust in that person, don't we? We start to think this person's not a man of their word. This person doesn't have any integrity. And the last thing I want anybody to ever do is to say that about our church, and especially to say that about our God. And so we made sure that we got that taken care of, that we could make that payment. And we've been very mindful of that coming up every week, making sure that we have those funds there, that we can make that transfer. You know, I think that we need to be careful, because oftentimes we will apply this to small things and we will apply this to individuals, but I think we need to make sure we're applying this to companies as well. No matter how big, because sometimes we can say, well, they're a huge company. They won't miss. Issei is not going to miss my $125 if I don't pay my bill on time, right? But if we have a payment, if we're supposed to make a payment, if we're due to make it, then we need to make it. Don't take advantage of others. The third warning that James gives us about our finances, we see it in verse 5 and 6. And he says, you have lived on the earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of the slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. And I think the principle that James is giving is there is when we spend selfishly. Because in our nature, we can be selfish people. We can look out for numero uno. We can look out for ourselves and our wants and our needs and our desires. We can even be very materialistic in that. Have you seen that? That materialistic mentality? I mean, Madonna was onto something in 1986 when she wrote, "We are living in a material world, and I am a material girl." We are material people. I saw this mentality of consumerism even ramped up even more this past weeks when I was in the States, because I knew Amazon was out there, right? But I'd never seen Amazon work as efficiently as it worked. Todd was telling me he got a package from Amazon here in Costa Rica this week. I didn't even know that was possible. But everywhere we went in the States, every house that we stayed at, Amazon packages were coming and going. I'm telling you, even the last week we were at the beach, we're at this isn't like any of our residents. This is a house that was rented, and we're there, and Sarah's sisters have like bathing suits coming by Amazon, and they're trying them on and sending them back, and you just see it. It's everywhere. The consumeristic mentality. You know, that word consumerism is defined in the dictionary, the concept that an ever-expanding consumption of good is advantageous for all. That the idea of an ever-expanding consumption of goods is advantageous for everyone. And so everywhere we go, we see it. Buying and buying and more buying, this consuming. And there's some crazy stuff out there to be bought, isn't there? I mean, I look at what some people are spending money on. I read this week that there's a house in Mumbai, India, that cost $2 billion to build. It's 400,000 square feet. It stands 27 stories tall, and actually the ceilings are vaulted in it, and so it's the height of a 60-story building, and has a staff of 600 people to operate this house. $2 billion to build it in a country that has one of the largest amounts of people living in poverty. $2 billion. You can go out and buy a car, a Bugatti Royale, that'll cost you $8.7 million. Women, if any of you guys are shopping for a purse, there's a purse that costs $3.8 million. You would never have anything in the purse that would have more value than the purse. $3.8 million for a purse. And so we look at those kind of things, and we look at those kind of spendings and expenses, and we say, yeah, that's luxury. That's what James is speaking about. But I want us to see that some of the things that we do are luxuries. Some of the things that we do add up. $7 coffee adds up. $20 sushi rolls, they add up. And I'm not saying don't drink coffee, don't eat sushi, although I will say don't do it at the same time, all right? But we need to be conscious of where our money goes, what we're spending our money on, and we need to be sensitive to the needs around us, to the point to where you may be headed to the coffee shop, see a need, and God may put on your heart, instead of getting that cup of coffee, to help that individual. Or you may be headed out to a sushi night and you see a need, or you hear about a need, and instead of doing that, you're sensitive to say, God, we're going to meet that need instead. I heard a story. Tony Campola told a story about a time that he was in a church, and they were talking about a missionary that was in Venezuela that had this need for $5,000. And they asked him, they said, Pastor, would you pray for this need? And he said, I don't want to pray for that need, because I think God's already given us the resources to meet the need. And he took his own money out of his wallet and he put it on the altar. And as the church did likewise, they raised $7,000 to send to Venezuela and meet that need. Guys, we need to be sensitive of the needs that God puts around us. And so those are warnings that James gives us, not to hoard, not to take advantage of others, not to be selfish with our resources. But then he tells us how we can make our money matter. Because instead of hoarding it, he says, invest it wisely. Look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 21. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 21 says, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moths and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. See, we want to sometimes hoard our resources for a rainy day, but I want you to know that it is raining. And it may not be raining in your little world, but it's raining in the world. It's raining on 3 billion people that are living on less than $2 a day. And God's given us the ability to invest wisely to help them. Think about that for a minute. How does anyone live on less than $2 a day? I know the World Race Team's here, and they're trying to do it. They have a pretty low budget. But listen, you ask, how do people live on $2 a day? I want you to know a lot of them are dying on $2 a day. They're not living on $2 a day. And so we need to invest wisely. Invest in eternal things. You know, there's only one thing that you can take to heaven with you. You know what that is? It's people. It's souls. It's people that you invest in, people that you pour into, ministries that you give to. You remember in the 90s that Ray Bolts that wrote Thank You? Thank you for giving to the Lord. And it got way overplayed in the 90s, but I'd love to hear it today. You know, that idea that this guy goes to heaven, and as he's in heaven, someone comes to him and says, thank you. You used to teach my Sunday school when I was a child, and thank you. And then he tells another story of someone who comes and said, a missionary came to your church, and you didn't have much money, but you gave it anyway. And that little bit that you gave is why I'm here today. We need to invest wisely. We need to make sure that our money matters. Listen, if you don't know ministries, if you don't know ministries where you can invest, we have some that we are part of here at the church. We have the prenatal center. What a great ministry to be a part of. Reaching out to these women and these children that are being born. And then they're doing ultrasounds, and they're teaching them about what's taking place with their body and how to care for that child. But they are discipling these women, and they are winning women and families to the Lord through that ministry. A great ministry up in Gracia, Residencia de Vida, that Erica's a part of. And some of you go up there and volunteer and spend some time with. It's an orphanage where they're reaching the greater needs of these children. They're not just feeding them physical food. They're feeding them spiritual food. We work with missionaries in Senegal. We work with missionaries in Mexico that have great ministries. And so invest in these ministries. Make a kingdom investment. Make your money matter. The second thing that he gives is, instead of taking advantage of people, he says, earn honestly. Don't make your gain by somebody else's loss. Don't make the reason that you can make money is because somebody else is losing money. And definitely don't cheat someone in order for yourself to make a profit. You know, it's hard to find honest business people anymore, isn't it? To find an honest person. I'll ask somebody sometimes, you know, whether it's here or in South Carolina, wherever I'm at, you know, and I ask for a recommendation. Can you tell me of a good electrician? And you know what people will most likely say when I say that? They will say, well, I can tell you who not to use. Oh, I've got a list of who you shouldn't use to do that. It's hard to find honest people. But we need to make sure that we, our policy as Christians, that we need to be known by our honesty. I don't care if it's politics. Imagine that, an honest politician or attorney or garage owner or wherever business you may be on, make sure that honesty is your policy. Make your living by being an honest person, making an honest living. And then the third principle he gives us for making our money matter is he tells us, instead of selfish luxury, share generously. To be generous with our income. 2 Corinthians 9 verse 7 says God loves a cheerful giver. He loves a cheerful giver. Why should we be generous? Because God has been generous to us. and we're called to be like him. And he didn't just give to those who were deserving. He didn't just give to those who had earned it, thank goodness, because none of us would be here today. But he gave freely, and he gave sacrificially, and he gave generously to all the world. And we're called to do likewise. We're called to be generous, to give generously. You know, there's people like that in every church. But I think they're few and far between. I remember in a church I was in years ago as a youth pastor, there was a guy in our church, and one day I said to him, he had this nice leather jacket on. I said, "Hey, I really like that jacket." And he goes, "You like the jacket? You can have it. Here, take it." And he's trying to give me his jacket. And I was like, "No, I was just saying it's a nice jacket." And he's like, "No, I really want you to have it. I want to give it to you." And I got to tell you, I was really conscious after that not to tell him I liked his pants or something like that, you know. But this guy, I mean, he literally would take the jacket off his own back, the shirt off his own back, and give it away. He gave generously. There's a guy that used to be a part of the feeding that we do on Wednesday nights over in the park. And I remember one night he was leaving barefoot. And I look over and I see one of the guys that didn't have any shoes wearing his shoes. He gave generously. He saw the need, and he was willing to meet the need. You know, if we all look for opportunities to share generously, God's going to give us, he's going to give them to us. If you wake up in the morning and you pray that prayer, "God, show me if there's someone that I'm to help today. Show me if there's someone that I'm to give generously to today." He's going to put that person in your path. So we may not have much. Compared to the world, we have a lot, little or much, whatever we have. Will you make your money matter? Will you be people who are investing wisely, investing in eternal things? Will you be people who are earning honestly, making honesty your policy in all that has to do with finances? And will you be people who give generously when God puts a need before you? I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up this morning. And guys, the reason that we need to apply these principles to our life and not just be hearers of the word, but be doers of the word, is because being rich can make you spiritually poor. But I want you to know it kind of works the other way around. Having little can certainly make you spiritually rich as well, because we learn to trust God. We learn to put our faith in God. We learn to be led by the Lord when it comes to the area of our finances. And so, let's be people who make our money matter, who are investing wisely, earning honestly, and giving generously. Let's stand together. Hey, as we close our service this morning, I want to close today just like we close every service and give you an opportunity to respond. The Lord may be speaking to you. It may have nothing to do with what we've talked about this morning. It may be a loved one that's been so heavy on your heart this week, and you just want somebody to pray with you. It may be finances. It may be something that the Lord's been working in your life, and you say this morning, "Hey, I'm going to surrender. I'm going to heed that word, and I just want you to pray with me that I would be obedient to what God's put in my heart." And we'd love to pray for you in that too. This altar's open. You can come here, pray by yourself. There's people that'll be up here that would love to pray with you as well. And so as we sing this last song, as we pray, I invite you to come.